Hello, everyone, and welcome to the End Credits Radio Show here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am your host, Adam A. Donaldson, and joining me today is...
Amy Chopp.
You're not one of the regular co-hosts.
I'm not.
What did you do with Peter Salmon?
I don't know. He wasn't here, so you asked me to come.
That's actually very true. I appreciate it. Thank you for making your first CFRU appearance also, Amy.
It only took like... You know, like 14 years after I graduated or something like that.
So. Well, that's probably still a record. Anyway, End Credits is a local movie show for local movie fans, and we are here Thursdays at 10 a.m., and we talk the latest in pop culture and review the newest movies, which this week will be the new superhero movie, Justice League. Now, later on the show, we're switching things up this week. Later on the show, we'll have an interview with Chris Cigola, the artistic director and conductor of the Guelph Concert Band, and he's going to be talking about their upcoming show, Christmas at the Movies. So we're going to dive in right away with our review of Justice League. And while I tune that out, I got to switch it up because we do have a clip. As per usual, we like to open with a clip, Amy. We're going to play this little clip from Justice League.
I know you have abilities. I just don't know what they are.
My special skills include viola, web design, fluent in sign language, gorilla sign language.
Silica-based quartz sand fabric, abrasion resistant, heat resistant.
I do competitive ice dancing.
It's what they use on the space shuttle to prevent it from burning up on re-entry.
I do very competitive ice dancing. Whoever you're looking for, it's not me. You're the Batman.
So you're fast.
That feels like an oversimplification.
I'm putting together a team. People with special abilities. You see, I believe enemies are coming.
Stop right there. I'm in.
It's just that easy to start a Justice League. So that is a clip from Justice League. It is the new DC Comics superhero film by Zack Snyder. It stars Ben Affleck, Gal Gadot, Amy Adams, Ezra Miller, Jason Momoa, Ray Fisher, Ciarán Hinds, and spoiler alert, Henry Cavill. It's
nobody knew that was coming.
So Amy, you know, you are an expert on comic book things. You are a manager of a comic book store, and so in terms of your experience so far with this particular line of movies and you know, the dark times and the Batman versus Superman, and we kind of came up a bit after Wonder Woman. But your professional perspective, how have these movies been treating you so far?
I think that Wonder Woman and this one are probably my favorites so far. Justice League definitely brought a little bit more, like, levity to the DC universe, which, I mean, when you're talking about comic book movies, they need some levity. Because even though DC tends to have, like, god-level powered people... The Batman versus Superman stuff was just so dark, and like Man of Steel was so dark, and it just seemed to take all of the excitement and life kind of out of the DC characters. But Justice League kind of brought it back, I think.
Yeah, and I'm with you on that. There's a noticeable difference in terms of where everybody's humor, and not just humor, but attitude.
Yes.
There's actual scenes of superheroes being heroic, which I think is vastly missing.
Yeah.
And it's especially noticeable in Man of Steel and Batman versus Superman, where you have these big, huge action beats where you are presuming hundreds of people are dying.
Yes.
And the superheroes don't seem to care. And in this movie, you actually see them actually being concerned about civilians and getting people out of harm's way, which was refreshing.
Yeah, definitely.
I agree with you, too. I think after Wonder Woman, this is probably my favorite. And how I'll sum this up is I left Justice, you know, there are problems, which I'm sure we'll get to, but I left Justice League with a smile on my face, which is more than I could say for Batman versus Superman.
Yes. Yeah. Like, you know, when I first saw Batman versus Superman, I kind of enjoyed it. Mm. It wasn't exactly what I had wanted, and it wasn't exactly what I had expected, but I make it a rule to watch as few trailers and I don't read any reviews, especially for comic book based movies, because I've had my hopes dashed so many times that now I try to go in as blind as possible to what is going to happen in the movies. And with Batman versus Superman, after I saw it, I was like, yeah, it was kind of okay. I mean, like, Batman was a little dark and a little more violent than I expected, but it was okay. I think what I really liked about it was Wonder Woman. I liked Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
And it got me really excited for the Wonder Woman movie. And this is a huge bonus, having her show up in another movie within the same year.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I mean, like, who does that happen for? That doesn't happen. So, I think she was the biggest draw for me to go and see this one. But, I mean, I really liked Ezra Miller as Flash as well.
And that was a big one I was worried about, because I haven't watched it in a while, but I was a big fan of the Flash TV show.
Yeah.
And Grant Gustin in that is a very good Flash, too. So can you have, like, two Flashes kind of coexisting at the same time? And I think you can, because I think there's just enough difference between the way Ezra Miller plays the Flash and the way Grant Gustin plays the Flash that you can enjoy them both in different ways.
Yes, yes.
Even though the story is still essentially the same, because you meet the Flash in this, and his father's in prison, and that's all going to lead into the Flash movie, I presume, at some point.
Yeah, he's a little bit younger, I think, because he hasn't started working yet for the forensics lab.
Yeah.
But I think I feel a little bit like Ezra Miller's version of Barry has a little bit more Wally West in it. Just a little bit. He's a little goofier and he's a little bit more fun. And I think that he brings the childlike wonder to the DC movies. Nobody's been around to do that, right?
Yeah.
To be like, oh my God, these people are doing all these amazing things. But he says it multiple times in the movie.
Yeah, that kind of character is important. And, you know, the Marvel Universe movies are filled with those characters.
Like, even, every second character in the Marvel movie.
That's important because it does give you sort of a buffer to appreciate all the weird things that are happening. If there's a character going, wow, this is weird, and it lets you in on the joke in a way. And yeah, he played that really, really good, and I think that was almost the point. I'm not sure. Skipping all the things you don't engage in, which is all the coverage of, like, who directed what and what was changed and what was reshot. I wonder how intentional that was and how maybe prominent, because certainly I think The Flash certainly has a very prominent part in this, but I wonder at what point the people involved in making the movie realized that they needed a character like that, and how much The Flash was like that, and maybe how much they turned it up, the amplitude, to make that a bit more engaging to those of us who need a bit of levity in these movies.
It definitely, I mean, like, there's little bits of it from the other characters, but he, like, the Flash is definitely the key to the gags and the jokes and keeping everything kind of funny and rolling along.
And I think also key to keeping it light is the Wonder Woman character.
Yes.
And I think Gal Gadot plays that very well. Not that Wonder Woman is funny, but Wonder Woman is definitely sort of a conscience for, if not for the team, but definitely for Bruce Wayne. And is sort of a counterbalance to that. Although she has her doubts about the endeavor and about, you know, protecting, you know, the world of man. She comes at it still with a positive attitude. And there's a scene where she recruits the cyborg, played by Ray Fisher, and when he shows up, she's like, oh, good, you made it. And it was like a little wink and a smile. And it's like, you know, you fulfilled, you know, I believe in you. I have faith that you can be contribute to this team and find your place in the world. And it's like, you did it. Good job. And so she plays that really well. And that carries over from the Wonder Woman movie,
oh, yeah,
too.
Yeah. I mean, and you can actually, I mean, there's slight differences with her character mm-hmm. now in all three times that she's shown up.
Yeah.
Like, she seems kind of cold and separated in Batman versus Superman, and then she's really naive in Wonder Woman because it's so early on for mm-hmm. her. Like, it's the first time she leaves Paradise Island, she leaves Themyscira, and now she, in this one, she seems a little bit more comfortable, but you can see it where at the beginning she's still kind of separating herself from everything, and at the end she's kind of like trying to make herself fit in better and trying to expose herself to people more.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I do like that scene at the end, and this isn't a spoiler, but you see Wonder Woman having captured some criminals. Yeah. And all these kids come up like wanting her autograph, and
yes.
it's also an interesting mirror on real life, because if you've seen Gal Gadot's social media,
yeah.
and everybody has all, like, little kids everywhere have
yes,
come to
droves and droves yeah, of small children
have come to see her as yeah. Wonder Woman, and you see those pictures pop up every now and then on her feed.
Yeah.
I think that brings us to Broke Woman.
Yeah.
Jason Momoa.
I actually kind of like Jason Momoa as Aquaman. I mean, Aquaman has been having a little bit of, like, I wouldn't say a renaissance, because I don't know if he was ever really super popular in the past, but he's a lot more popular these days than he mm-hmm. used to be. And I mean, it was pretty exciting for them to cast someone like Jason Momoa for yeah. the character, specifically because then he's not just like blonde-haired, blue-eyed, pretty boy guy, right?
Right.
Like, he's actually kind of grizzled, and he's an outsider. Mm-hmm. And if that's the point they're at in his story, then that's what he should be. He should be kind of like an outsider. He's not in the movie very much. He doesn't get to say very many things
yeah.
that mean anything, really.
Yeah.
He has a lot of catchphrases.
Yeah.
I still liked him. I would still go and see an Aquaman movie if he's the one playing the character.
Well, you're lucky. There's one coming next year.
I know, right? I think I was more excited when they reveal Mira. I mean, for anyone who knows who that is. So, I mean, like, actually going into Atlantis a little bit and mm-hmm. seeing a little bit of the other characters, but specifically having him interact with Mira was pretty cool in my books. So, yeah.
And speaking of not much to do, unfortunately, but I mean, I do admit that I found that kind of universe building in the movie, I didn't find that as annoying as even in the Marvel movies at times, where they're trying to shoehorn in stuff
yeah.
to play up on future movies. Because in this, you got, you know, Lois Lane is in it. You have Commissioner Gordon's in it for a couple of minutes.
Yes, only. Like, literally.
And Mira's in it, and Doctor Cyborg's dad is in it. But it's again, it seems that it's there to serve the story, and you know, Commissioner Gordon's kind of shoehorned in, but he is there to provide a function, and he also does get the chance to comment on the nature of this particular Batman
yes.
versus past exploits, because it is implied
yeah.
that there's the Bat family has
yes.
been around at some point.
And maybe he doesn't get along with others very well. So
yeah.
I think the thing is that you can make a comic book movie that's accessible to everyone, or you can make a comic book movie that kind of, you know, takes a little bit of the leeway of, yeah, people are kind of going to know who some of these characters are.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't, like, if people don't know who they are, they'll find out. I go to a lot of comic book based movies with friends who don't read comics, and they'll ask, like, oh, why are you reacting to that person that randomly showed up on the screen? And I'm like, you have no idea. and I mean, that draws people in to try and learn more about the characters. So, I mean, J.K. Simmons showing up as Commissioner Gordon, I mean, like, do they even say his name? Do they even call him? I don't remember them saying Gordon
point.
At all in the movie, yeah. But you knew exactly who he was as soon as he showed up. So
trench coat glasses, and he yeah, turned on the bat
mustache,
signal.
Yeah,
so it's, yeah.
yeah
it's,
yes.
it's, you put two and two together. We're going to pause here with our review of Justice League in order to bring you an interview with Chris Cigola of the Guelph Concert Band, and that's going to be just after the break here. You're listening to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. You really are a heel. You're as cuddly as a cactus. You're as charming as an eel, Mr. Grinch. You're a bad banana with a greasy black peel. You're a monster, Mr. Grinch. Your heart's an empty hole. Your brain is full of spiders. You've got garlic in your soul, Mr. Grinch. I wouldn't touch you with a 39 and a half foot pole.
So I'm joined now by Chris Cigola, the artistic director and conductor of the Guelph Concert Band. The annual Christmas performance of the concert band is this Saturday at the E.L. Fox Theater of the J.F. Ross Secondary School. It's at 3 p.m., and it's called Christmas at the Movies. So, Chris, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, my pleasure.
I was thinking about Christmas music in general, and I think for all of us, there's maybe two sources from which, you know, I guess we experience Christmas music. On the one side, there is the religious, and, you know, for those of us like me who grew up going to church and Sunday school, we know all those.
Yeah.
And then there's the other side of it is experiencing Christmas through the movies and through Christmas specials and pop culture, in other words. So in preparing for the concert this year, it seems like you were favoring the one over the other, and I'm wondering why perhaps you were leaning more towards Christmas and pop culture and in thinking about this year's concert.
I don't think we're favoring one in the special. I really think that, you know, Christmas is a time to enjoy our family. Of course, you know, it's the religious aspect that it's probably more and more forgotten in our culture today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we kind of have both in our repertoire.
Mm-hmm.
For this. But as I, you know, as you mentioned, we have a couple of more songs that are inspired from the movies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now, you know, the movies, the Christmas movies that are made today, they don't really have an religious aspect. So it's
mm-hmm.
more, it's got that entertainment factor, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the music is great, and, you know, it's a way of bringing the families together. You know, at Christmas, we watch a movie that is entertaining, a family movie, you know. So, and then we go to church. You know, that's how it is, right?
Mm-hmm. I do want to get to a couple of the selections in the show, but
mm-hmm.
if you can talk generally, first of all, about how you put together one of these performances in terms of, you know, your role as artistic director and in terms of maybe the input that other members of the concert band has in terms of how
yeah.
you come up with a theme and how you choose specific mm-hmm. songs.
Well, it's a very, it's a great process.
Mm-hmm.
We have an artistic committee And we get together around June. You know, we have kind of a potluck get together, and we talk about the future concerts, right? And mm-hmm. We select the themes, and then we think about the themes and what music we can have for our concert. You know,
mm-hmm.
so in this case, we're thinking about our Christmas concert,
mm-hmm.
and we came up with the idea of having a Christmas concert inspired from this movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
So first, what we do, we talk about movies and, you know, movies that we saw that, you know, we remember, you know, from back in the days. And the music that those movies had, you know, and something that, you know, it stayed with us, right? So,
mm-hmm.
So we make a list of movies, and then we see if you know, we can find arrangements for a concert band.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually, I would say, the hardest thing to find, because you know, the music that is in the movies today, they don't really think of arranging the music for concert bands.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's usually for orchestras where, you know, it's played on synthesizers and
right.
things like that, electronic music.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what we do. We do a lot of research on the music. Then we listen and we look at the scores to see if it's doable for us.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can get the scores, how much it costs, because you know, that's a big issue,
right?
You know, nowadays, with this community orchestras or bands, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get any help from anywhere, so we need to be very, very careful with how much we're spending. So yeah, so we see what we have in our library, and then you know, we create a list, and we go from there.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I said, I didn't want to talk about a couple of particular choices. I mean, there are some classics that I think a lot of people recognize and would appreciate, you know, things like from How the Grinch Stole Christmas and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. But mm-hmm. as someone who's a fan of the filmmaker's works, I sort of pay particular attention to the fact that you have also Nightmare Before Christmas in there, and you also have The Gremlins Rag, which some people may forget that Gremlins is essentially a Christmas movie. Christmas is central to the theme, and it takes place at Christmas.
I think you can use this Gremlins for Halloween too.
Yeah,
it's a Halloween / Christmas movie. You know.
Well, it can be said of both movies.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, you know, it seems like there's a definite taste in there for, let's say, unconventional Christmas fare. I was wondering where that came from.
Well, honestly, we didn't think of, you know, being conventional or unconventional. We, you know, because we're artists, we're musicians, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm pretty sure people, when they're going to come to our concert, they're not going to think about that. They're just enjoy the live music and the fact that, you know, we choose a repertoire that is well known. And, you know, yeah, we didn't think of that, actually.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but yeah, as you said, you know, Gremlins Suite, it is inspired by I think it was 1984
mm-hmm.
classic, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was a horror comedy, but it's got great music. It's
yeah.
written by Jerry Goldsmith,
mm-hmm.
and this guy is an original.
He's one of the all-time greats for scores.
Yeah, yeah, he is, man. He is. You know, and everything he wrote is, you know, is really enjoyable to listen to. I mean, if if the score would have a different name, we wouldn't think about unconventional, right?
Probably not.
Yeah. So, yeah, and you mentioned The Nightmare Before Christmas. This is a medley, right, that is inspired from the 1993 Tim Burton's musical, stop-motion animated film. Now, the score is composed by Danny Elfman, who has worked with Tim Burton since 1985 on films, such as Beetlejuice. Have you seen that movie?
Sure, yes, absolutely.
Edward the Scissorhands, you know, you're talking about big, big titles here, Planet of the Apes, you know, and the guy who wrote music for The Simpsons, you know?
Yeah.
Now, the medley is comprised of five pieces from the film, you know, the opening overture, and What's This, Christmas Eve montage, Sally's Songs, and This is Halloween, which again, which, you know, you know, but this is our culture, right?
Right.
We have a tendency to combine, you know, this kind of, I wouldn't say Halloween is a celebration. It could be a celebration, you know, for the young kids and, you know, but, you know, our society had the tendency to transform all this. So all this religious celebrations, so can everybody enjoy them, you know?
Right.
But we're get a taste of something. I'm not really sure, and I really don't want to get into things right now. I'm an artist, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm an entertainer. I want to entertain people, you know, and this is what we do.
Yeah.
Musicians, we entertain. We don't really, we don't do politics. We don't get too much into religious aspect of music, you know.
And if something works, you don't want to kind of lobotomize it and try and figure out why it works. It you know, it as long as it works.
Of course, you know, at the end of the day, if your audience is happy after the concert, this is what you care for, right?
Right.
You share, you spread the love for what you're doing, you know.
You mentioned it was a bit hard for to find sort of newer musical pieces too, but the program does close with the Polar Express, and I remember the film, but I gotta say I don't remember the music very much from it. So how did that sneak in?
Man, this is, do you remember the song Believe?
Yes,
which is
I think so.
This is actually the opening piece of the medley.
Mm-hmm.
The Polar Express is a medley, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the film is I don't know. It's an animation, right?
Right. It was stop motion. It was performance capture animation. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this the Polar Express I think earned 3 Academy Awards, right? It was nominated for 3 Academy Awards or something like that.
It was a breakthrough,
but it included the best original song for Believe, right? So hey, it's got great music in it, you know. So and this we could find this arrangement of the Polar Express for band, for concert band, for all the instruments that we have in the band. So,
okay.
You know, it is, I think, you can, I don't even know if you can say which one is a Christmas movie, which one is a holiday, Christmas holiday, you know, that it's so complicated nowadays. What's holidays? What's Christmas? We don't know anymore, right?
Yeah.
So, but these movies are, in my opinion, are holidays movies. They don't really celebrate Christmas, the religious aspect. They celebrate the fact that we all get a break, you know, and we get to enjoy our families, our friends, and get together and watch a movie and, you know, as I said, a family movie, you know, a friendly movie where we, you know, yeah.
Well, Well, perhaps we can wrap up just talking about the the artistic side of it, in terms of, you mentioned how you start in June talking about what music you're going to perform, but when, by the time you're getting to this point, when you're getting to the point where you're actually ready to show this in front of the audience, what, in terms of, you know, where you've come from initially when you're planning things to when you're ready to perform, you know, how do you feel, and what have you sort of learned about yourself, and what have the musicians learned about, you know, themselves and this music that perhaps they didn't going into the process and starting rehearsals?
Well, there's so many aspects that we learn, you know, while preparing for each concert. But, no, let me tell you something about the Guelph Concert Band. This band was formed in 1878. So the band is, I believe, is older than the city itself, the city of Guelph. Now, this this band has members, you know, community members, that it's a mix of professional and amateur musicians, right, with a passion for music. Now, everybody, we probably have right now a little bit over 60 members, and we rehearse every Sunday evening from 7 o'clock to 9:30. So, you know, you're talking about adults, and think about the love and the passion that these adults have, that every Sunday they come from 7 to 9:30 in the evening to practice with the band. Right, in itself, it's a great experience, because, you know, and I'm so honored and so, you know, humbled to be the conductor of this wonderful, wonderful people. They have a love for music, and they want to share it, and they want to share it with the Guelph audience. And they've been doing this since 1878.
Not this exact band.
You know what I mean? So it was way before me, and
right.
I'm pretty sure it's going to be after me too. You know, so it's a great experience. We always have new members, younger members, a lot of members from the university, actually, the University of Guelph. So, you know, out there, if there are students at the University of Guelph who would like to join a really, really great group of musicians, you know, they can do it. You know, they just have to show up with their instrument, and, you know, of course, they have to have skills, you know, to know how to play the instrument.
Sure.
You know, we're talking about wind and brass instruments and percussion. And, you know, we the experience of sharing the love for music is incredible. And then, you know, starting a new concert, you know, with new music, going through the music, learning all the parts, you know, it's an amazing experience, you know, and I think we all learn from every rehearsal. So.
Great. I'm just going to do a quick sign off, and then I'll wrap up the recording portion, okay?
Okay.
So I've been talking to Chris. Jeez, I almost messed it up.
It's okay.
I've been talking to Chris Chagola of the Guelph Concert Band, and you can get tickets for Christmas at the Movies on Eventbrite. There's a link on our website, and you can learn more about the concert band at guelphconcertband.ca. Chris, thank you again for coming on the show today.
Thank you very much, Adam.
And after the break, we will be rejoining our review of Justice League, already in progress. You are listening, of course, to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio. I did want to come back to Jason Momoa, though, because I do think you're right that the fact that they would cast him, who's, you know, he's incredibly charismatic.
Yes.
Not the blonde-haired, blue-eyed, Aryan Aquaman, shall we say.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the energy, we talk about how Ezra Miller brought a lot of energy and humor to The Flash. But that was kind of part of the character. And the way I kind of read Aquaman is that a lot of the energy and joy of Aquaman doesn't necessarily come from the character. It comes from Momoa.
Yes.
Who's, you know, someone who has, I'm going to say, lurking in the background of Hollywood, even though he's not a lurker. But I mean, but he's been around for a while. You go back to Stargate Atlantis.
Mm-hmm.
Nerd test. But he, you know, he was...
Whoa, that's deep. It's Stargate Atlantis. Now he's playing Aquaman.
Yeah. That's, I actually didn't put that two together. But he was like the fourth lead in Stargate Atlantis. And that was like 10, 12 years ago. And now he's, you know, a Hollywood leading man. He's got that show Frontier where it seems to be about... basically being about Jason Momoa being rugged in 17th century Canada. And it shows where, you know, you can, the movies can build on the comic book mythology, that you don't have to necessarily be tied to what's in the books.
Yeah.
And I, you know, being something of a comic book reader myself, I know that there's been work on the Aquaman character in the last few years to make him less sucky, to borrow Raj from Big Bang Theory's analysis, but to putting Momoa in this really takes it up a notch, and he has such presence and such swagger as well.
Yeah,
and so he makes it really fun.
Yes, and he makes him seem more like a soldier. Like, he makes him seem like, and again, like you said, he's helping people. Like, he's trying to help people, and he does, and that's just what he does, because he can. So
yeah, because that's where they find him, is in this, I think it's a like Norwegian village.
Yeah, like this little village.
Pulling people off, though. Yeah.
Yeah.
Pulling people off fishing boats and
and
then, you know, collecting a fifth of whiskey and putting it on his tab. And it shows the ability that you don't have to script everything, that a lot of it can be in the way an actor portrays things.
And yes.
You get everything you need to know about Aquaman when he's lugging this fisherman into a bar, throws him on the table, and then takes the whiskey and heads out. It's like it's on him. And
He swims fast. He's strong. He controls water a little bit, kind of, sort of.
He may or may not talk to fish.
Yeah, may or may not talk to fish.
Which I think was a joke I leaned a little too heavily on.
It was also leaned pretty heavy when they relaunched the comic with the New 52 stuff. It was a gag in that as well, because, you know, in the first issue of that, Aquaman goes to a fish restaurant and he's eating fish. And everybody around him is like, "Don't you talk to fish?" And he's like, "Don't talk to fish." Just don't.
I also want to talk about, obviously, I mean, we joked about it being a spoiler, but obviously, I'm not sure why they hid it in, you said you don't watch the trailers, I, however, watch every trailer, and it's fairly well hidden that Henry Cavill returns as Superman.
Yeah.
And even though I think they released like a press photo a year ago of the six members of the team, and it had Henry Cavill in it.
Yeah, and I mean, his logo was on all the posters and stuff. The thing, I mean, I was pretty sure that he was going to show up in the movie, and the thing that spoiled it for me was when the info got released that when Whedon came on to do reshoots, that they were going to have to digitally erase Cavill's beard. And I was like, well, okay, so he's in it, but why? Yeah. I mean, Superman's been dead for how long? I mean, it's been how long? I mean, hair keeps growing on dead bodies for a certain amount of time. So, I mean, he does air quotes shave in a way, right? Like he's had a beard. He had a beard in the Man of Steel. And I mean, it's been established in a few different things that he uses his own heat vision and like a reflective surface to shave his own beard. So like, I mean, I guess it would depend on which scenes they had to reshoot.
That's true. It that wasn't a stylistic choice on Henry Cavill.
Oh, no, no,
life. He was shooting Mission Impossible 6.
And it was like contractually obligated to keep the beard.
Yeah. Because they were in the middle of shooting that when he had to do reshoots. Yeah. But putting aside Beardgate, the thing I did appreciate was it looked like somebody realized that Henry Cavill is an incredibly charismatic man. Because did you see Man from U.N.C.L.E., the remake?
Yes, I did. Yeah,
because he was smooth as silk in
Yeah.
And it's like, how can he be this way in one movie?
Yes.
And it's not like Superman's like a player or anything, but there's an aspect of Superman that is he's very friendly, he's very approachable.
Yes.
But in one of the few lines I think he gets to speak in Batman vs. Superman is like, I will break you. And it's like, are you Ivan Drago instead of Superman? But thankfully, somebody, I guess, may have got a copy of Man from U.N.C.L.E. and saw that Henry Cavill is actually very good at talking and smiling and engaging with people. And he can romance a woman. Yeah. And it feels very natural.
And miss his mother.
And he can miss his mom. And
you know, just be friends with people.
He can you make jokes with other members of the team.
Or, you know, the villains they're fighting. Yeah, I liked the fact that they actually included things like how strong and how fast he actually is. And, like, am I allowed to talk about specific scenes? Is that okay?
Depends.
Do people know that that you talk about things in the reviews? It's just
the
interactions between Superman and Flash.
Okay. I think if he's in the movie, he's going to interact.
Just the fact the fact that there's like attention to detail for the fact that Flash is really fast and most people can't see him.
Yes,
but Superman can.
That's a great scene where Superman comes back from the dead
and he's fighting everyone.
And he's fighting everyone, and Flash goes to try and outmaneuver him, and then you see Superman's eyes turn.
Yeah, to follow him.
Follow him out of the corner of his eye. And that was really, really great.
Yes.
But also there's an after credit scene where they.
Yes.
Do occasionally race. I think they do it for charity in the comic books. They have a Flash Superman race. You need $50,000 for a new heart monitor. Flash and Superman to race.
Yeah, yeah. But, it's been established a couple times in the comics that Flash is faster. Because why would he have the superpower of being fast if someone else was faster than him?
Fast in a foot race or?
In a foot race.
Yes.
Yeah,
okay.
We want
to make that clear. Because
when Superman's flying, no one's going to catch him, right? There's nothing to stop him from going faster if he's flying. But in a foot race, yes, Flash is meant to be faster.
Although I think in the scene, it's Superman is flying. But
yeah.
It was just nice to see some fun.
Yes. Yes.
Again, it was nice to see fun in this. And I enjoyed a lot of Superman's interactions. And even like you say, with the villain, there was a scene where after he comes back and he goes flying back to the Kent farm with Lois, and she says, you know, you smell good. And he's like, what, did I not before?
Yes.
Which seemed like such a, that seemed like such like vintage Christopher Reeve.
Yes.
I was glad of that because Superman is kind of cornball. He does make the dad jokes.
Yes, he does. he's the good Boy Scout, right? Like all of his gags are kind of like that. So I feel also that they kind of like just brightened him up a little bit.
Yes.
Even color palette wise, I feel like when he shows up in the suit again, it's ever so slightly brighter, which was nice to see.
Yeah. but I think that's all over this movie too. I think in the Wonder Woman costume, you know, notice a bit brighter. Mm-hmm. Colors in general are a bit brighter in this movie. And I don't know if Zack Snyder has like this black filter he puts on everything. And when he unfortunately had to leave the film because of a family family emergency, if they decided, you know what, Zach's gone, maybe we can just, you know, take the black filter off
and just turn the lights on.
Just, you know, we'll adjust the RGB and
yes.
that's a Photoshop joke for the three of you listening who do a lot of Photoshop. But there are some problems with this, and I think the big one has to be the villain.
Yes.
The Steppenwolf, who looks like he is like third rate World of Warcraft design. You have Sirian Hines, who's a really great actor and got a really great voice, but that's not Sirian Hines. That was somebody.
Yeah. Why
subbing and?
Yeah. Why is he CG? Yeah. Just in general, why is he CG? There's no reason. I mean, I'm a big believer that there's no reason for it. in this day and age for to replace an actor entirely with a CG character, because it still, it doesn't look as good as Hollywood seems to think it does. You can still tell, right? You can always still tell that it's a computer generated character. And there's lots of other ways that you can make someone look huge. Like, he could have worn a suit. It could have been camera angles, like all sorts of things. And yeah, I mean, it was a little bit lost on me because of the fact that as soon as you put a CG character up against so many other real people, it's just like, you know, whatever.
Yeah, it's just, it doesn't provide a lot of opportunity to interact. And I think villains being problematic in comic books is sort of a trend. But I think one of the reasons why the Avengers work so well is because you have Loki there.
Yes.
And you have Tom Hiddleston as Loki, you know, wearing a Loki costume and not wearing a motion capture suit, and being replaced by a Loki monster in post-production. and so much of what I think that makes the Avengers work is almost one-to-one he has an interaction with all the heroes.
Yeah.
And it didn't feel the same here. And I don't know whether it's because of time restrictions or what it was, but it felt like Steppenwolf was a very moderate threat at best, even though they give him this backstory where he basically started World War Ancient.
Yes.
And
I think it comes back to the fact that when you're comparing DC and Marvel, like Marvel has always been like the everyman hero, like the hero on the ground sort of level. And DC tends to have the god level heroes. And if you're going to have god level heroes, you have to have god level villains. Right. And it's very obvious that they're heading towards doing a dark side story. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to do that, you're going to have to introduce it slowly, because there are so many levels to that, right? There are so many different characters that everyone interacts with. And I mean, in the grand scheme of things, if you've never read a Justice League comic, or you've never read like a New Gods Jack Kirby comic, you're not going to know who Steppenwolf is anyway. So to see him on the screen, it's just going to be like, oh, he's some weird alien dude who's trying to destroy everything.
Right. But that's all the more reason why you could sort of, I don't think the Jack Kirby audience is that huge. I would bungle the reception.
Yes.
But, they could have done something. I mean, I'm glad that they put a lot of focus on the heroes and expanding on their relationships and doing the things with characters like Superman to make them more in line with something we're familiar with. But at the same time, it's almost pointless when the villain is weak. Not that he was weak in terms of power, but just in the plan. I mean, the plan is one of these typical, we're going to get the MacGuffin and we're going to open a hole in the sky. Yeah. And that's been sort of done to death. In fact, it was done in a DC movie just two movies ago in Suicide Squad. And it just, you have a strong team dynamic. You have strong heroes, of course, but as you were mentioning, you have to have the god-level power. You have to have a legitimate threat, but it didn't feel like Steppenwolf was that, and it felt like it was relatively easy to
I feel a little bit like they went with Steppenwolf and they're going with like the whole Mother Box thing, because it keeps true to using Cyborg, because Cyborg's origin was tweaked a little bit recently, and the technology that makes him what he is now Apocalypse technology, right? Like it is a Mother Box that kind of creates Cyborg. So to keep, if they're going to keep pushing Cyborg as being a member of the Justice League, they've brought him up from the Titans and the Teen Titans stuff. If they're going to keep pushing Cyborg as a character for the main team, then they kind of have to also make sure that everyone knows why he's there and what sort of tie he has to that sort of stuff. And I mean, it was very ham-fisted in this movie that he's tied to these boxes in some way and he can't control it and all that stuff. And I mean, you could have, I personally would have preferred to have seen Granny Goodness than Steppenwolf, but that's just me. But I mean, using Steppenwolf is just another way to tie all the stuff like between Cyborg and Apocalypse together. Mm-hmm. So Could have been anyone, I think, really.
Or could have been, I mean, there are kind of like several different sort of henchmen of Darkseid that they could have brought in.
But Granny Goodness comes with extra characters.
That's true.
She comes with an army. She comes with her own team for everyone to have someone to fight with.
so did Steppenwolf in his way. That, you know, all these parademons, and then that's another thing, that's all these little faceless CGI creatures that,
yes,
you know, if you've seen one, you've seen a million. That's been, you know, a bit problematic too. But yeah, it does make me sad that it wasn't, that it, you know, the one, I mean, there was a lot of stuff for this movie to do, but it was sort of sad that on the, getting everything sort of right with the team, they sort of fall down on the villain. And I hear what you're saying about all the apocalypse stuff. But I'm just saying there could have been a way to make it better. I don't question the decision to use this particular character, to use the apocalypse concept. And I think part of this too was when they were planning to do like back-to-back Justice League movies.
Yeah.
So they were going to have Darkseid appear in part two, or I don't know if they were planning on a cliffhanger for this one. Like, that's a lot of inside baseball stuff. But I think in the midst of trying to reorient and repair and play catch up with everything that had gone wrong with B versus S, that something had to fall through the cracks, and I think it was the villain and the main story. But
yeah, I mean, I mean, comic book movies, they're not winning Oscars for screenplay and stuff, right? Like,
well, I was gonna say Suicide Squad did win best makeup Oscar.
Best makeup, but I mean, makeup and special effects and sound effects and stuff like that. Yeah, but I mean, they're not gonna. I wouldn't vote for this for a screenplay Oscar, but that doesn't mean
how
it wasn't.
How bold of you!
it's not to say that I didn't still enjoy it, right? Like, it's the question of it's not a B movie, but it's a fluff movie. It's a movie that you go to and you just enjoy. And this one was more enjoyable than some of the other DC superhero movies that have been coming out in the last little while. So
yeah,
whether or not, I mean, like, the if you haven't seen the movie, make sure you stay to the very end, because that, I think, is the glimmer of hope.
Yes.
The final end credit scene is the glimmer of hope when it comes to villainy, I think. So.
And that was a really great scene, and I was surprised how much I dug that scene, because I did not like the character when he appeared in the previous film.
Yeah, I'm on the fence still.
Yeah.
Because I didn't really like him in Batman versus Superman, but I'm holding out, because I'm a big believer that everyone should get their chance to play an iconic character if they've been cast.
Yeah.
And they shouldn't have to fill in for someone else. Like, you look at Superman Returns, mm-hmm. and I mean, I enjoyed that movie because it could stand on its own two feet, but because it actually kind of picked up where the Christopher Reeve movies left off. So the characters weren't playing, like, the actors weren't playing the characters. The actors were playing other actors playing the characters.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a big believer that, you know, if you're playing a villain and you're an actor that makes me feel uncomfortable, you're probably going to be an okay villain.
Well, definitely Kevin Spacey will make you feel more uncomfortable than he used to these days.
He played a really good Gene Hackman in Superman Returns. He really did.
Yes. I actually like Superman Returns as well. And I remember at the time when Man of Steel came out and people dumping on it. And it's like, you know, the main criticisms of Superman Returns where it's too emo and there wasn't enough action.
Yeah.
And then Man of Steel comes out and it's like, it's not emo at all and there's way too much action.
Yeah.
And so it's like people don't really know what they want. Anyway.
No, they never do.
I want to shout out Danny Elfman's score in this, because he works in a lot of, like, there's tones of the Superman, John Williams theme and of his own Batman theme.
Yes.
That I enjoyed a lot. I think this is probably my favorite score of his that he's done in a while.
Yeah, I don't even know if I actually noticed those bits of those classic theme songs in the movie,
mm-hmm.
but I noticed it in the credits when they were going by, where they were crediting all those songs, and I'm like, It's probably just like a subconscious thing. If you have that little bit of the Superman theme and you have that little bit of like the Batman theme and stuff like that just mixed into the score, when those characters appear on the screen, you're just going to understand who they are no matter what because you hear it.
It's very, very subtle. I think the Superman theme appears when he first arrives at the big fight at the end, and the Batman theme is when he goes in to meet Commissioner Gordon, where there's like a flash of lightning and the tarpaulin flickers in the wind and you're done. And that's another thing I liked about it. And maybe we can talk a bit about Zack Snyder before wrapping. But I one of the things I do appreciate about Zack Snyder is that he does get the comic book iconography. The opening scene where Batman is waiting on the ledge for the criminal to slip out of the apartment was very comic booky.
There
were scenes like that in B versus S as well. So I appreciate Zack Snyder's understanding of how things look and how things are arranged in a comic book. I wonder if it might be better in the future if he comes back to these, if maybe he takes a hand off the script and the story direction and he just focuses purely on the visuals.
Yeah, you're right. The visuals, he's very good with that. Like, he's definitely established the characters as being larger than life, of being more than just regular people. And it does look like comics. Like when when Batman like struts into a scene and he's enormous, right? Like he's just a normal guy. There's definitely a good visual to it, but I have yet to feel that Zack Snyder captures the actual essence of the characters in the way that is accessible to everyone and not just people who like the super ultra violent like late 80s, early 90s versions of characters and stuff. Mm. So
you think he'll be back?
That's hard to say. Mm. I mean, Batman versus Superman may have not been as successful as they wanted it to be, but it still made them a lot of money.
Very true.
And I mean, Justice League, I had heard going into the movie that you could hard and fast see the difference between the scenes that Snyder shot and the stuff that Whedon came in and reshot, but I actually couldn't. I felt that it was pretty seamless personally. And if he's starting to go towards the lighter side of things, then maybe. I think it depends on the character. I mean, he's said before in interviews that like Watchmen is his pinnacle, right? Like Watchmen he thinks is the best comic book. And I don't think that you can apply Watchmen to every Superman story or every Batman story. Like you can't apply that same sort of story and darkness to everything else. Like I want to see them in the sunshine.
Well, you are the expert, Amy. So we do appreciate your expertise, and we appreciate you joining us for this interview today. So thanks so much for being part of End Credits and being officially inducted into the CFRU bosom. And
well, thank you for having me. It was a different experience because usually I just go to watch movies, and this time I had to go to watch the movie and think about it while I was watching it.
So. Oh, well, that's what we do here. We help people think. And I guess I don't know where I was going with that. Let's call it a day here. That's it for this edition of End Credits. We hope you liked it as always. And if you did like it, you can listen to us again on our website, endcreditsradioshow.com. We are also on social media at End Credits Radio Show on Facebook and End Credits Radio on Twitter. Amy, if people want to hear more of your opinions on Justice League or anything, where can they find you?
Well, I'm the manager of the downtown Guelph location of The Dragon. The Dragon has two locations in Guelph. There's one in the Old Quebec Street Mall. That's the one that I'm usually at. And then there's one at Gordon and Courtright, which is a lot closer to the university if you're hanging out here. We've got Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all the good stuff. And it's all at Dragon Guelph. You can just find it all over the place. If you want my own personal opinions, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ChopBomb.
ChopBomb.
Yeah.
We thought Peter's Mr. Towel Rack handle was a bit odd, but there
you
go.
Well, you know, with a last name like Chop, I gotta go with it. So.
Meanwhile, my last name is Donaldson, and I'll be back here on CFRU later today at 5 p.m. for News and Politics on Open Sources Guelph with Scotty Hertz there. And until then, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca. Stay tuned for more great programming here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And we'll be back here next Thursday at 10 a.m. for more End Credits. We'll see you then.